Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Orrin McIntyre. So the GOP, the right, you gotta love it. They're addicted to losing. They've been handed possibly one of the greatest gifts that anyone could ever receive in an election year. A civil war amongst their leftist opponents, right down a critical fault line inside their coalition. But being the GOP, of course, they have to lose. They want to lose. They can't stop themselves from losing. They're addicted to it. And so they need to step in. They need to ride to the rescue of the left and save them from the showdown that is occurring on college campuses. I want to go ahead and get into everything that has happened with the college protests and why the right seems so determined to screw this up, what they should be doing instead. I also want to go ahead and look at a video from a conservative commentator talking about the conservative ideology, how important it is to stick to the conservative ideology. And I want to delve into why this is such a problem, why, again, this is the addiction to losing that the right seems to have showing its face, why actual conservatism, real conservatism, is about focusing on the good of the people and understanding their general welfare on a day-to-day basis while connecting it to tradition, rather than going ahead and trying to make some kind of religion out of a set of political ideological assumptions. So I'm going to get into all that today, guys. But before we do, let me tell you about ISI. Universities today aren't just neglecting real education, they're actively undermining it, and we can't let them get away with it. America was made for an educated and engaged citizenry. The Intercollegiate Studies Institute is here to help. ISI offers programs and opportunities for conservative students across the country. ISI understands that conservatives and right-of-center students feel isolated on college campuses and that you're often fighting for your own reputation, dignity, and future. Through ISI, you can learn about what Russell Kirk called the permanent things, the philosophical and political teachings that shaped and made Western civilization great. ISI offers many opportunities to jumpstart your career. They have fellowships at some of the nation's top conservative publications like National Review, The American Conservative, and The College Thinker. If you're a graduate student, ISI offers funding opportunities to sponsor the next great generation of college professors. Through ISI, you can work with conservative thinkers who are making a difference. Thinkers like Chris Rufo, who currently has an ISI researcher helping him with his book. But perhaps most importantly, ISI offers college students a community of people that can help them grow. If you're a college student, ISI can help you start a student organization or a student newspaper or meet other like-minded students at their various conferences and events. ISI is here to educate the next generation of great Americans. To learn more, go to ISI.org. That's ISI.org. All right, so like many of you already know, there have been a number of protests raging across many college campuses in the United States over the last week or so. They've escalated from kind of your run-of-the-mill protest to the full-on leftist Antifa-style occupation. It seems like we go through these cycles every, 7 to 10 years where there has to be this wave of complete domination on these campuses. Kind of a leftist vanguard gets out of control and deploys very similar tactics over and over again. We saw these, of course, with the rise of wokeness on college campuses, the social justice movement, as it was called back then. And we're seeing another wave now, and this wave is connected to Palestine and Israel, the kind of the showdown in Gaza between these two. Unfortunately, we have this policy of both constantly importing people from foreign countries and involving ourselves in the conflicts of foreign countries, which means that we basically are always dealing with the ancient blood feuds between, kind of tribes across the entire world. We're just importing that into the United States. And so we constantly have to put up with this stuff because we've kind of chosen, or, it's been forced upon us, a set of policies that leads to this conflict inside our borders, not just outside of our borders. The good news, if you can call it that, is that this showdown is a kind of a leftist civil war. It's a showdown between two factions of the left that fundamentally disagree on most things and are only really bound into their coalition because their general target is kind of the average Republican middle-class white voter. Like, outside of that, these two factions of the left don't have a lot in common. You have the mainstream left, and the mainstream left kind of has a legacy loyalty to the state of Israel. There's a lot of money, influence, other things tied to this that's built into their establishment. And so they tend to side with Israel in many things. And then you have the vanguard left. Now, the vanguard left is controlled by woke ideology. They're controlled by an obsession with the anti-colonial mindset. They're very much in kind of into this third worldism. And so because of that, they tend to actually be vocally against Israel. Now, interestingly, I think increasingly more of the mainstream left actually agrees with that. I think more of them want to be with the vanguard, but they still have a lot of their power, the mechanisms of power, the way they're set up inside the left and institutions and the United States in general, make it very difficult for them to kind of push into that direction. And so what you're seeing is that there's a civil war between these two factions. And the beautiful thing is it's occurring on college campuses. Now, normally when there's some kind of showdown, the left is kind of chimping out over something. It's innocent people. It's right-wing business owners, conservatives living in their towns. They're the ones that get hurt. They're the ones who have to pay the price. But this conflict is mostly confined to college campuses, which is just kind of perfect because college campuses are the most left-wing places imaginable. They're the ones radicalizing people. They're the ones pushing a lot of toxic nonsense into the mind of the average student. And so the fact that this is, you know, basically occurring on enemy territory should be great for the right, right? If you have an election season, and during this election season, you're seeing these unhinged people celebrating and attacking each other and screaming death to each other, like all kinds of extremist behavior. Again, YouTube, to be clear, this is what they are saying, not what I'm saying. And so they are attacking each other constantly. This is amazing, right? Like if these are your opponents, and during an election year, they are squaring off in this manner on college campuses. There really could not be a better thing for you, right? Because the average American parent who is sending their child to these campuses is really just doing that so that they can get the credential they need to get a job anywhere. And the average American has been abused by this system. The American college system is a failure. It usually fails to educate kids and anything but leftist ideology. It doesn't prepare them for jobs. It takes all of their money. It makes it impossible for them to have a home or start a family or anything as they get into the workplace. They end up in debt slavery. Like, this is a disaster for the average person who just wants to send their kid to college thinking that they're going to get an education. And now they're watching that education get shut down, destroyed by radical people. They don't like it. This is, and the left can't do anything about it because the people involved are spouting leftist ideology. This is the kind of ideology that even many on the mainstream left have embraced. They were already parodying this anti-colonial ideology. And so the fact that basically the vanguard of the left has moved Israel and Jews in general into this kind of white oppressor basket means that all of a sudden the left has to deal with a very dangerous kind of internecine warfare in their coalition. So this should be the best thing that could possibly happen to the right. However, the right is like, well, we got to get in there because, you know, law and order, and we got to save them from this situation, right? We got to rush in and save everybody involved. We can't have, you know, anti-Semitism or whatever on our campuses. And so we have to shut down. Nobody can criticize Israel, you know, whatever. And so we have to rush in and stop this. And so what we've seen is the deployment of police in some of these situations. And let me play you some footage from Ohio State.
Media, 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 media.
All right, so a couple thoughts watching this here. First, I would just like to remind everybody, and this should actually be the first takeaway. This should be the first thing that the right should be pushing If the right were a real opposition, if conservatives, the GOP, were actual an opposition party, they really cared about the country. They actually cared about fighting for the well-being of the people who vote for them. The very first thing they would point out is that clearly you can actually just send the police to stop riots. And I remember in 2020 when we weren't allowed to do that, when the New York Times was firing their editor for running an editorial from a GOP politician saying, actually, we should just use the National Guard to stop riots. I was told that it's impossible. There's no way you can assert law and order. And to be really clear, this is, of course, a massive failure by Trump during his presidency. So don't let him off the hook here at all. But the GOP is all of a sudden very in favor of deploying the police, deploying the National Guard, stopping riots, stopping protests. And these riots, while there is some bad actors, to be very clear, so there are some people who are making death threats. There are some people who are threatening people and intimidating people. This is nothing compared to the riots of 2020. This isn't even close, okay? In 2020, they were burning buildings down. They were burning down businesses. Even some churches started to be set on fire. They were attacking people. People died in these events. Okay. And that was in the middle of what was supposed to be a massive pandemic that, you know, anyone going outside could kill us all. Right. So that was just crap. Every bit of it was just complete crap from beginning to end. They could have deployed police. They could have deployed the National Guard. They could have put an end to the riots. And you need to understand that what this video shows you is that both parties, left and right, wanted your neighborhood to burn. They wanted the violence. They wanted the intimidation. They wanted to unleash the narco tyranny. They could have stopped it. We can see they have the ability to stop it. They just don't care. Or more importantly, they do care and they want to punish you. Okay. So we need to stop any narratives about how this violence couldn't be controlled, the protests can't be put down. They can't be stopped. Very clearly, they can. When the right people are in trouble, when the right things have been threatened, when the right taboos have been crossed, when protected groups that are, you know, actually cared for in this country get threatened, we can break out the police. We can break out the National Guard. Force can be deployed. We can shut this stuff down right away. Okay, so the first takeaway from this footage should be, really, your incredible anger at the fact that your politicians lied to you, that they betrayed you, that they allowed this stuff to happen in 2020, that they did not care. And as soon as they feel like they need to, they can flip the switch, drop the hammer, and get law and order right back when they want it, right? All right. So that said, the second thing we need to take away from this footage is, look, I get that this is cathartic for some people, right? You see the police come in, you see these, you know, people who, you know, hate you, right? Many people who have problems with Israel, many people who are angry about it. They're like, oh, well, I'm going to side with pro-Palestinian protesters. These people hate you too. Okay. They hate you. All right. Don't fool yourself. Okay. You don't need to be on a side. You don't need to pick a side in the left-wing civil war. They both hate you. Okay. You don't need to suddenly support violent, you know, third worldism that hates you for some reason. Like that's not necessary either. You really can just stand back and let them fight, right? You can just do the meme. Just let the kaiju go at it, right? Let the two of them battle it out. But I understand that to some degree this is cathartic to kind of watch this get involved. You know, to watch these protesters, you've been waiting forever. You watch the protests in 2020. You know, you see these people, they're taking down American flags and raising Palestinian flags on the campuses of places like Harvard. I get that this is in some way cathartic for you, but you need to understand these people hate you. And more importantly, the involvement of the police and other things that are coded right wing gets the left off the hook. It takes them off the hook because this is their problem. This is Joe Biden's problem. I mean, you know, as much as anything's Joe Biden's problem, the main problem for Joe Biden is he doesn't know where he is. But this is the left's problem. Okay. This is whoever's running the left's problem, because what they have is a showdown between their factions. And if the right comes in and swoops in and saves them, it will have been the biggest case of political malpractice in history. Because when the police come in, when other things that are coded as right-wing come in and break this stuff up, guess what happens? The left gets to save its face. It gets to point at the right and say, look, they're the ones who are deploying violence. See, the mainstream left can be like, oh, well, we knew that things had gone too far, but we weren't going to send in the police. We weren't going to break things up. You know, we abhor any violence or anything like that. They're still the racists. They're still the sexists, whatever. That's what they want to do. They want to maintain their friend-enemy distinction. They don't want to have to actually work through the problems of their coalition because they know those problems are unsolvable. And so instead, they want to blame the right. And you cannot ride to these people's rescue. Conservative GOP governors, red state governors, hear me on this. I know many of you, we got it. No, no. Let it play out. Let them fight. Now, red state governors should maintain order, right? Violence is illegal. You should not allow it. You should not allow that on the campus. It is still your job to protect your constituents. But to be really clear, anti-Semitism, while not good, is not ethnic hatred of any kind, is not good. It's not illegal. It's free speech. And criticizing Israel is certainly free speech. And these people have absolutely their right, and to your political advantage, they also have the willingness to battle each other over this. And you should let them, okay? You should absolutely let them. You should not be sending in the police. You should not be sending in anyone else to go break this up for them. Do not solve this problem for them. Let them hash it out, because they can't. They can't do it. And the longer this goes on and the more it becomes clear what's happening, the worse this gets for the left, okay? This is exactly what they did not want this year, which was already going to be a very difficult situation for them. So this is absolutely to the right's advantage, and you should not involve yourself. I want to play a video of some frat guys in Arizona because I want you to understand what the left wants to happen here. Listen to what they're saying in this video.
Right. We've got the white frat boys throwing away protesters' belongings, and we've got the pigs in brown doing nothing about it, although we are being forced off campus. Pigs in brown.
All right. So you've got these frat guys who come over and help the police clear out this, this encampment. It is, I believe, illegal. So they are following the law and breaking it up. But see what's happening here, right? Oh, she says, the white frat guys are doing this. This is the white frat guys working with the police. So these guys, and again, this is not their fault. They're just trying to help out. I'm not blaming them at all. They're just trying to get this garbage off of their college campus. It's there to them. It's a place that they, feel at home. They don't want to see this. I totally understand. But what this allows the left to do is unify, right? Unify behind these symbols. Oh, it's the white frat guys who are doing this. Oh, it's the police. It's that they're the ones doing this. It's not other people inside my coalition that I have a fundamental disagreement with, but I don't want to address because it's way too messy. And we're definitely not going to talk about why they actually oppose each other, why they actually hate each other. The messy reality of the leftist coalition and the tensions that are brought about by the conflict in Gaza. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to deal with that. So instead, they want to unite behind the thing that always unites the left, right? Hatred of these white frat guys. Get rid of them. They're the problem. So you want to keep situations like this from occurring, okay? Because the left are eating themselves. They are destroying themselves. They are exposing serious contradictions inside their ideology that are unsustainable. And you do not want to give them a unifying enemy. Can't do that. Because if you do, it's a free escape from their problem. It's a free escape. And not only that, they can parlay that into election year issues of police brutality and you know, the racial conflict, but you know, obviously they're having a racial conflict to a degree on the campuses already, but they don't want to focus on that one. They don't want to, that's not the kind of racial conflict that they can use for their advantage. In fact, that racial conflict actually reveals something very dangerous about the left-wing coalition and what it's going to do to this country and the way it's going to tear everything apart. So they don't want to show you that racial conflict. They want to exacerbate their old reliable, right? And so you don't want to give them the excuse. You don't want to give them the excuse. Instead, here's what the right should be doing. Here's how they should be reframing this. So if the conservatives, if the GOP, if we had a real opposition in the United States to kind of the uniparty hegemony, what they would be doing right now is they would be saying, look at these college campuses. These are supposed to be places where your son or daughter can go and learn. They can become productive members of society. They can have a valuable skill, and they should be able to go into the workplace. And instead, look what happens here. These places take your money. They refuse to let you go bankrupt. They refuse to let you bankrupt any loans you get. You have to take out these huge loans enough to get a down payment at least on a house. You know, and instead you're pouring it into these hyperinflated colleges. The degree you're getting is increasingly worthless. You can't find a job with it because the left is allowing massive immigration, not just illegal, but legal immigration. The right is doing this too, by the way, bringing in people on visas to go ahead and take not just, you know, lower wage jobs, not just menial labor jobs, but the kind of jobs that people want when they go to a college and get a college degree. They're bringing these people in. So you borrow a bunch of money, you delay a bunch of your life, you take on a bunch of debt you can't pay back because you're not going to get a job, or you're not going to get paid very much for that job because you have to compete with a bunch of foreign labor because in general, your money is being made worthless through inflation and all these other things. And then when you get there, it's unsafe. The college campus is unsafe because the leftists there are rabid radicalizers. They're violent. They're obsessed with foreign conflict. They care more about screeching about foreign countries and shutting down the very thing you're paying, hand over fist for. That's what's happening on college campuses. You're taking out massive loans to send your kid that are unbankruptible to a place where they are unsafe, where there's violence and there's constant protests. The facilities that your money is supposed to be paying for are shut down. The classes you're supposed to go to are shut down due to this constant political radicalism and violence. And they can't even go to class. They can't even get the education that they're supposed to be providing. If they're even there learning anything, they're learning to be radicalized by exactly this ideology. Like, this is insane. And this is insane. And so what the GOP, what the right conservatives should be saying is, here's what we're going to do. Okay, we're going to solve this problem for everybody. First, we're going to seize the endowments of these universities. They've been basically hiding in the tax code. They've been using the tax code while they steal money, while they inflate their tuition, and they steal money from young people, and they make a monopoly of the employment market so no one can get a job without their degrees. They've been stealing this money from young people. So we're going to seize the endowments from these places that have claimed to be tax exempt but are actually just for-profit degree mills that are inflating the prices and holding students hostage. We're going to take back the money that they have stolen from students and stolen from their parents. We're going to take that money, and that is the money we're going to use to do loan forgiveness. We're not going to do that unconstitutional stuff that Joe Biden's doing. We're not going to do all these tricks. We're not going to make all these cutouts, these unconstitutional cutouts. We're going to do this properly. We're going to take the money legally. We're going to put a massive tax on the endowments of these universities, take in all of that money. Yeah, GOP, that's right, conservatives. We're raising taxes on the universities. And we're taking all of that money and we're paying off the student loans. That way, the student loans are not paid off by people who didn't go to college. They're not paid off by construction workers. They're not paid off by small business owners. They're not paid off by people who did their part and paid off their own student loans. Instead, they're paid for by the universities, the people who got rich, the people who got, you know, make work jobs, the people who funneled money to their corrupt friends through the university system. We're taking that money. That's what we're going to pay off the student loans with. Not only that, we're going to get rid of federally backed student loans. So there's no longer an incentive to infinitely raise the cost of colleges. That's immediately going to bring down, if the seizing of the endowments and the removal of federal student aid from the loans, the backing from the student loans, so that you don't just have these massive mortgage size loans going to kids who can't possibly pay them backed by the taxpayer. We're going to strip all of that out, so there's none of this artificial inflation and this taxpayer being on the hook for these loans. And we're going to make them bankruptable. We're not going to have this special cutout for student loans. So if you don't want your student taking that loan and then going bankrupt and you losing all that money, well, I guess you better reduce the cost of college, because if you hand out $100,000 student loan, because that's what college costs now, and then they bankrupt it, you're just out of money. You're just screwed. Sorry. So you get rid of that. And finally, strip out disparate impact from civil rights law to make sure that companies can hire people without a college degree. Because right now, because of civil rights law, you basically have to use college degrees as your only possible screening mechanism. You can't use IQ tests, can't use aptitude tests because they're racist or whatever. So strip that out so that you can once again use common sense tests, so that people don't have to spend all of this money to go manage a Walmart somewhere, to go do the kind of job that their grandpa did. They can go back to a sane society where not everybody has to have a college degree to work at a gas station. I just did that story about how Sheetz is being sued by the Department of Justice because they use criminal background checks, and criminal background checks disproportionately show that minorities have criminal backgrounds and they're more often rejected for employment. So de facto, it's racist. That means, again, what gas station is going to require you have a college degree to show that you're competent or that you're just not a thief. This is insane. We have to get rid of this system. So the right could in one fell swoop say, we're going to help the youth vote. We're going to get the youth vote by doing student loan forgiveness. We're going to make everyone who hates what colleges become happy because we're going to get rid of their endowments. We're going to bring down the cost of college. We're going to take the taxpayer off the hook for all of this. And largely, we're going to remove the monopoly that the left has on ideology, because we're going to remove their stranglehold that they have, their monopoly on employment credentials. It's a win-win for everybody. It's a win all around. But we're not hearing any of that. Instead, we have GOP governors trying to ride to the rescue and save the left from the terrible decisions that they've made. It's just a terrible, terrible idea, okay? And what you need to be doing is making sure that college campuses are stripped of the vast majority of their power, the vast majority of their money, return back to the organizations that train doctors and engineers, the absolute things that really need college degrees, and strips out and throws away all this other garbage, while also getting rid of this ideological radicalism and this massive payday, this huge patronage network for the left. We can do this. This can be a victory for everybody. This is the best kind of victory. It's politically smart. It's morally correct. And it could be popular all at the same time. Why wouldn't you want this, right? We could do this. This can be done. But of course, it takes political will. It takes you actually caring about the people involved. It takes you not being wed to ideological positions. These are the things that you have to do if you're going to fix this problem. Stop fixing this problem for the left. Let them fight it out and use this as a political opportunity. So yeah, I just saw Donald Trump tweeted sent out on Truth or whatever, in the protest. No, Donald Trump. No, wrong. Somebody, somebody on Donald Trump's team, somebody on the, you know, somewhere, someone who has connections to him, sit him down. Tell him this. Tell him how to win with this. Tell him how to turn this into a winning position. Stop being stupid and win, everybody, right now, please. All right. So the other thing that I wanted to get into is a clip from a conservative commentator. You might be familiar with Eric Erickson. He's one of these kind of guys who was, he's like a National Review. He was on CNN. He was on Fox News for a long time. He's one of these guys who is, you know, kind of was never Trump, and then Trump got into power, and he's like, well, maybe Trump, and then, you know, now he's back to never Trump again, I think. Yeah, many such cases, unfortunately, on the right. And he had a lot to say. He got a lot of criticism. He posted this on his Twitter. He cut this clip, so he thought it was a good point. I'm going to play some of it here from his show and talk to you about it real quick. So here's Eric Erickson talking about real conservatism and why we have to go back to real conservatism.
There is some weird movement happening within conservatism where a lot of people who were conservative suddenly aren't, and they don't want to give up the name conservative.
So I want to be clear at the beginning here that I have given up the name conservative. I often say we conservatives, but really that's shorthand because it's conservative at this point is what a lot of people think of as on the right. I don't really see myself as conservative. I think that sadly, the institutions that conservatives want to conserve are now entirely in the thrall of the left. And what we need is restoration and rebuilding. There's nothing left to conserve in the current frame of power. And instead, the right must become the builders. They must become those that are starting institutions, creating new things, leading the way. They can't be those that are just trying to desperately hold on to the status quo, to the institutions that exist now. So I'm not even one of the people he's talking about, you know, still being a conservative, because I don't really think of myself that way. I do use the language sometimes because it is the general blanket for people who are kind of on the right in the American context many times. But no, it's not really how I see myself. But he's saying, you got to watch out. There are some people who want to change what conservatism is, but they want to call themselves conservative. Now, a lot of people are calling this the new right. People who are more interested in winning and changing things and seeing kind of some kind of positive shift in American culture and its future, rather than just, you know, desperately grasping onto kind of losing strategies. But he's not the only one to be very concerned about this approach.
They want to redefine what conservatism is, and I think that's a bad thing. Limited government and free markets are a good thing, and yet we have a number of people at conservative think tanks in Washington, D.C. now who want government control.
So to be really clear, a lot of people have criticized neoconservatism, but the thing that really is concerning, I think, for many of these established conservatives is these ideas are not just on the outside anymore, okay? I'm from the outside. I was a teacher and a journalist. I worked briefly in Republican politics for a couple of years when I first kind of got out of college, only at the very, you know, at the state level. I was never connected. I was never involved in any of the, you know, real Washington Beltway establishment sense of that word. And you know, there's been plenty of us from the outside who have criticized what's going on in Con Inc., establishment conservatism. But very few people, and I understand that there's some irony now that I'm on a more mainstream conservative network, but I never had those connections. But a lot of people are concerned that guys like me are in positions like I am now. And more importantly, for guys like Eric Erickson, the think tanks, right? You start to have people in the think tanks who don't think like doctrinaire neoconservatives. And that's a real problem for many of the mainstream conservatives, because they know that the think tanks move a lot of what happens, right? This is where the up-and-coming talent gets drawn in. A lot of money flows through here. This is where policy is often created, drawn up. Many of the minds that eventually end up running campaigns or being put as staff into positions in the executive branch should a Republican win. These people come from think tanks. And so, a lot of these guys are worried that the think tanks are starting to listen to the vanguard, because the neocons worked really hard to purge real conservatism out of the American right. They got rid of all of the kind of 50s conservatives who pre-existed the neoconservative movement. They purged out Birchers and others. They purged out the paleocons. They pushed out guys like Pat Buchanan and Paul Gottfried and a lot of people like that. And so they don't want to see these people back. They thought they had won that argument, that the neoconservatives would rule the right forever. And they thought that was just the way things were going to be from here on out. Buckley had been victorious, and this was what the right was going to be moving forward. And so the fact that, the return of Donald Trump and paleoconservatism, again, Trump is a very flawed guy. I don't think he's very ideological. I don't think he was a paleoconservative. I think he was a moderate Democrat, New York Democrat for the most part. But the spirit behind him is certainly one of paleoconservatism, one that is interested in putting America first, putting Americans first, putting the nation first before foreign war adventurism or free markets or whatever, caring about the good of the people of the nation. And they do not like this. This is a problem. This is a threat. They don't want this to come back. And so they are... they're worried that this has made its way into the think tanks, because once this is in the think tanks, that means it's going to actually get injected into the movement's establishment proper. This isn't just a bunch of guys talking on the internet anymore. This isn't just some learned but relatively irrelevant intellectuals writing books somewhere. This is working its way into the actual structures of the party. And by the way, they're right to be worried. I am surprised at the number of texts and messages I get from people in very established corners, very mainstream adjacent corners, or just straight up mainstream corners saying, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, keep hitting on that. We're more and more of us are talking like that now. This is not what they want. This is scaring many of the Never Trump neocon type guys, and with good reason. They should be worried.
Want their government to control it. Now, I need you to understand the problem here. If you limit the size and scope of the federal government, it makes it harder for big government to do things.
Has that been your experience, Eric? Has that been the case? We've heard about small government, the importance of small government and free markets, forever now. That my entire life, I grew up believing on this. This was just below the Bible on my absolute automatic axioms. This was what I believed. I was spoon fed this from a young age. Okay, where's the evidence for this? How is that working out for everybody? Now, I want to be clear. There is some important truth to the fact that smaller government is better. However, this is what the truth is. It's better, not that government is just arbitrarily smaller. There's no value in arbitrarily small government. There is value in government that is restrained by social norm and social compact. Now, there is a correlation between the physical size or the actual, the actual scope of power and money wielded by the government and abilities of other social spheres to stand against it. So I'm not saying that there's no connection there. There is indeed one, okay? But government should have sufficient authority in the areas where it is important, okay? The complete retreat of government from you know, the from moral areas and other parts of the social sphere has not actually created a retreat of government interference. What has happened is that conservatives said they were going to get small government. So they pulled away from, you know, the public square. They pulled religion out of the public square. They pulled family values out of the public square. They pulled their influence out of the public square. They got rid of blasphemy laws. They got rid of blue laws. They got rid of all these things that are, you know, restricting our freedoms and, you know, create big government, blah, blah, blah. They got government out of all of these things that they were told to. And what happened is the left just shoved their government in. It's not that government got smaller. It's not that the size and power of government was limited by the conservative principle of small government. All the conservative principle of small government did was tell conservatives it was their principle to lose. It was their principle to not use power. It was their principle to retreat every time they were in office. And that the left, well, their principle is big government. So they can ideologically and morally advance their belief system every time they're in power. And all this did is create an environment where government was not restrained at all. Government power did not stop at all. And instead, we had this constant expansion. And look, things like free trade, to the extent that capitalism, free trade, whatever, free markets is good for your people, and in many cases and ways it is, you should embrace it. And in the places where it is not good, like where your jobs get shipped overseas, where your economy is strip mined by global organizations, where your people are vilified and made victims of these giant corporations that do not care about the people they're theoretically conserving, in that instance, no, it's not good. That's bad. And you should stop it. You should stop being married to ideology. And instead, you should be thinking about the good of the people of the country. You should put America first, not your ideology first. Conservatism is about conserving, at least it should be, about conserving the people of this country and their traditions and their way of life, their religion, their beliefs, their families. That's what it should be conserving. And whatever tools are good for that should be on the table. And whatever tools are bad for that should be discarded. Shouldn't be ideological, should be focused on the good of the people.
If instead you decide that you want to be in charge of the government and use the government for your purposes, you're going to set...
Okay, he's just describing an election. If you instead want to be in charge of the government and use the government for your purposes, yes, that's called getting elected and having power. Yes, the right needs to use power. Yes, the right needs to get elected and get comfortable with using power. Absolutely. That is what governance is. If you don't do it, the left is going to do it. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have principles. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have a plan. But it does mean you need to stop telling people that, oh, you want to be in charge? You want to use the government for your plan? Yes. Yes. That's not that, that's you should be using the government to conserve. That's what you should be doing. If not, why bother? You're just the left, but slower. As Michael Malice says, you're just the left going the speed limit. If the left says we use power and the right says we don't, then you are just addicted to losing. You're what Sam Francis called beautiful losers. Oh, I've got my principles. No, you don't have principles. You are unprincipled. You're a coward. That's not a principle. That's cowardice. You don't have the guts to fight for what you actually should believe in. You don't have the guts to protect the people you should be protecting. That is not principled. That is not principled conservatism. That is just being a loser.
Precedents that the other side will use when they come to power. And ultimately, there's no such thing as a permanent political majority in the United States of America.
Who is still holding on to this myth? Who is still, how do you still parrot this without like just cracking up? Oh, if we use power when the left get in power, they'll use it against us. They locked you in your homes. They put their thumb or an entire, you know, weight set on the scale. They threw their sword onto the scale during an election and yelled, "Woe to the conquered," and you did nothing. Oh, what if you set a precedent for what the left does? They're trying to put their political opponents in jail. Douglas Mackey is facing jail time for a meme. Donald Trump is sitting in a courtroom instead of running his campaign right now because the left have created charges out of thin air for no other reason than an attempt to criminalize their opposition. January 6th defendants are rotting in jail to this day while 2020 rioters from Black Lives Matter and Antifa go free. What if you set a precedent? What if you set a precedent that the left will hurt you? Get out of here with that garbage. How stupid do you have to be? How can you keep looking at the world around you and keep pretending that, oh, if I use power, my enemies might use it against you? Really? You think? You think the guys who are deploying the CIA and the FBI to crush you might use political power? What are you talking about? This is delusional.
So if you grow the government for your purposes and set the precedents of that growth, when you're out of power and the people you don't like are in power, they're going to use your precedents and the government you grew, and they're going to use it against you.
Again, this is a complete myth. Yes, I get under, in theory, this is how government is supposed to check government. This is Federalist 51, how ambition checks ambition, right? In theory, yeah, I get it. Except that's not what has happened in practice. In practice, what has happened is the total state has emerged. By the way, you can go ahead and order my book. It comes out on May 7th. The total state has fused multiple parts of our consensus-making apparatus with our security state, and they all work together. The left is never out of power, or I should say the uniparty is never out of power. Yeah, Donald Trump might win an election, but when Donald Trump wins an election, is he in power? His generals committed treason and laughed in his face and gloated about it. The executive branch straight up just told Trump no on many occasions. He was not in power. He was elected. Technically, he has the same power under Article 2 of the Constitution that Barack Obama or Joe Biden had, but in actuality, he did not. So no, the consequences of the election do not just eventually come. The pendulum does not just swing the other way. The left have taken the managerial administrative state and turned it into a leviathan that holds power for them. And not only is that the case, you specifically are arguing in the same speech for why the right can't punish these people if they do get into power. So in Eric Erickson's world, he just throws mutually assured destruction out the window, right? The plan is you fire a nuke, we fire a nuke. So nukes are a terrible idea because the minute you fire a nuke, we're going to come back and hit you. Now, in here, he says, oh, I'm for mutually assured destruction, or that's why the right can't build power because of mutually assured destruction. But he just got done saying why the right can never fire the nuke, why they can never actually destroy. That doesn't work. You can't threaten, say, oh, the mechanism that holds power in place is mutually assured destruction, and then promise your enemies you'll never fire back. If we fight back, they win. That's the argument here. If I fight back against my enemy wins. Oh, okay. How's that working? You feeling good about that? It's just insane. Obviously, the pendulum does not swing back. Obviously, the left retains power through its constant control of entertainment, of academia, of the deep state or the unelected bureaucracy, of the security apparatus, be it the FBI or the intelligence agencies. The left retains control, whether they win the election or not. The only people who are ever out of power are the right. The left is always in power. The right might get to hold power for a moment, might get to sit in the seat, but it never actually wields it. Specifically because guys like Eric Erickson tell them not to. And so the left has zero consequences for creating anything they want and wielding it against their enemies. And then the right gets guys like this telling them, oh, whatever you do, don't actually do anything that could scare the left. Don't do anything that would actually punish them. Don't do anything that would actually hurt them. Because our job is to be ineffective losers anytime we get elected.
Sadly, some conservative groups in Washington, D.C. have decided that the federal government can set about some sort of justly ordered society. Your view of a justly ordered society, I assure you, is completely different from the view of pro-transgender progressives who want a justly ordered society that is going to come after you for not supporting transgenderism. And yet
it already does. Like, again, this is so stupid. Forget the argument from nowhere. This is the argument from like 1995. I can tell you exactly where this argument is from. It's so stupid. He's acting as if the last 20 years just didn't happen. He just hasn't seen any of the events that have occurred around him. Oh, you know, their vision of the world is different from your vision of the world. And if you try to build a justly ordered society, then their vision is different. Yes, that's correct. Yes, we have different visions of the good. That's the whole point. That's the whole reason to be involved in politics at all, is that you have a different vision than the other people. Otherwise, you would just let them rule you. So yes, you have a drastically different vision of the world. And by the way, their vision and your vision cannot coexist. You cannot work it out. You can't hug this one out, guys. You can't have normal families, safe families, kids who are raised in a stable environment, and trans ideology shoved onto kids from the time they're 4 years old in a preschool. These things cannot coexist. One of these worldviews is going to win. And this is the problem. Eric is still stuck in this idea that we can just have this endless detente. This is the liberal lie. This is the classically liberal lie. That we can end the political friend-enemy distinction. That political conflict is done. And that it's all just negotiations over, you know, the technocratic management of some kind of government here. That is not what is happening. The left have a particular vision of the world, and they will force it on you. The people who want to win are going to beat the people who want to be left alone every time. It can be your vision of the world, or it can be the left's vision of the world. There is no world where, like, everybody just, you know, hangs back and does their own thing. That obviously, that is so far in the rearview mirror, it's comical. And the fact that he's still saying that this is the case, that this is a possibility. In fact, this is what principled conservatives do. Absolute insanity.
Some of these conservative groups have decided they're going to grow government to justly order society. And you do need to understand, you're not going to hold on to power in this country forever, short of abandoning this country, short of abandoning the American Republic as it currently exists, which I think is the subtle undercurrent of some of these guys. They're not really fans of the American Republic and would like to seize power and hold power. There is some weird...
And this is the last part here, right? Is this idea that he still thinks that the American Republic is just operating as normal. Yeah, that's what we got here. We got a constitutional republic. We've got a constitutional republic where, the government locks up its political opponents. We've got a constitutional republic where generals ignore the commander in chief and laugh at his face and brag about it. We've got a constitutional republic where internet millionaires basically buy out the electoral system and change the rules on a dime after locking people in their houses for a year and having riots. Yeah, we've got a constitutional republic where, remember, The line was, it's a republic if you can keep it. We didn't. That's tough. That's tough to hear. That's sad. But it's true. And again, this is the argument from 1995. It's just ignoring everything that has happened. It's ignoring everything around us, all the evidence, and saying, why won't you just hold on to these principles? Because they're not principles. These are not principles. This is a set of ideologies that you told yourself were conservatism. But go back and read Russell Kirk. Actually, go back and look at the people who wrote things about the conservative movement and the conservative mind. Go back and read Burke, the original conservative. I think even he's a little too liberal, but they knew things that Erickson doesn't know. They specifically abhorred the idea of abstractions. They specifically abhorred the idea of ideology. They knew that conservatism should be about conserving the people and their way of life, protecting the nation as it is for their posterity. It was not about holding to free trade. It was not about holding to, neoconservative foreign policy. Not about conquering the world in the name of, whatever. That is not conservatism. Conservatism is putting your country first, knowing what's best for the people who live in your country because you are part of them, because you care about them, because you're involved in their lives. And yes, in many ways, small government does help to do that, by the way. There is a true value in localism and subsidiarity. That part is true. But you cannot achieve that in our current environment because the left have conquered every institution. So to some extent, you will need power to break these things down, if nothing else. And if you actually want to have a credible threat of opposition, you have to actually be able to push these things back. You can't tell your enemy, oh, well, we don't use power. We're too good. Yeah, sorry, but our principles say that whenever we're in power, we sit around and wait for you to come back and destroy us. That is not mutually assured destruction. That would, even if the pendulum were true, your very principles would destroy its actual use because your principles prevent you from holding the left in check. Your own espoused principles keep you from doing the thing you said the founders wanted you to do. So no, you are not a principled conservative. Sorry, this is neoconservative junk ideology. This has destroyed the right. It needs to go. I'm sorry you feel that, oh, the evil America Firsters, the paleocons, they're coming in to the think tanks and they're taking it. Good, good, good. It's about time. You guys failed. You pushed out everyone in the conservative movement who actually cared about the country. You prioritized your own ideology and foreign policy over the good of the people who live in this country. You lost every possible conceivable battle, and now you have the gall to hector people who are trying to really win and make a difference. Get out of the way. You failed. Go back to left where you belong. Real conservatism is about saving America for Americans. Not your ideology, not your preferred economic system, not your global hegemony. It's about America. That needs to change. That's what the conservatism should really be about. All right, guys, let's go ahead and check out the questions of the people here. Let's see. Sorry, Jess D. I'm going to go ahead and skip that question just because I need to be careful with YouTube and make sure that the channel is not struck. But thank you for supporting the show here. Ed says, do you see an argument for true right-wing counter-ideological zealotry to defeat leftism? So I want to be really clear on what ideology is, because I think one of the problems here is people understand what I mean by ideology. When I say that you need to reject ideology, I don't mean you need to reject principles. I don't mean that you need to reject intellectual understanding. I don't mean that you need to reject a lot of things that are critical to opposing the left. I do mean what I was saying there, that you need to avoid this abstraction of systems and putting that above the good of the people. A true right-wing conservatism would protect the people of this country first, and it would do what is good for them first. And its zealotry would come in its dedication to the people of this country and their well-being first. And it would not be married to specific, economic systems or foreign policies beyond the extent to which they help the people of this country. If you're a capitalist, you're a capitalist because it helps Americans. If you're, for the defense of something, it's because military defense of something is because it actually protects the well-being of people, not in some weird abstract, oh, well, we have to go fight them in Ukraine or the Putin will invade California tomorrow. But like actually materially improves, the protection of the United States. I think you can be zealous to the extent that you protect the people of this nation and its well-being, I think that's healthy. Though zealotry is often it's by its usage an extremist. So we'll just say there's a healthy protection of the people of the United States, of this country, of its well-being, that I think people should engage in. But the abstractions that ideology in that sense, I think needs to be abandoned. Tiny Stupid Demon says GOP Delinda S. Yeah, I believe just due to the nature of America and it's kind of the truth about its dynamics, electoral dynamics, that you will probably have a two-party system, even if, you know, a significant change comes. And the right wing will probably be concentrated in the GOP to some extent. But I think the GOP, as it currently exists, does need to be destroyed. Yeah, it does need to go. I think it's super unhealthy. I think the vast majority of people involved with it are far too ideological, far too interested in kind of their Washington cutouts and their Beltway interests. I think that something called the GOP probably will be the vehicle that kind of whatever comes next uses to help improve the country or change things. But the GOP as it is currently constituted is a disaster. Let's see. A creeper weirdo says, against ideology, I'll do it if Yarvin can. Again, I have a lot of respect for Yarvin. I think that overall he's a very valuable thinker. I do think that in general his materialism means that he treats the people of America just like any other people, and he might want what's good for them, but he doesn't really tie it to, I think, kind of the spiritual that you need to in order to truly value these things. And that does lend you to ideology. I think that in many ways ideology is a substitute for religion. Many people said, oh, well, we need to have the Enlightenment and liberalism so we can get rid of these wars of religion. But we didn't really get rid of war, and we didn't really get rid of religion. We just kind of discarded religion for a pseudo-religion, for ideologies, and we then fought about those. So, you know, the Soviet Union was really good at killing people, and it didn't have an official religion, but it had an ideology it was based on. And it was murderously effective at enforcing that ideology. So something to consider. Creeper Weirdo says, I think John Goodman had a right wingish brother, learning all sorts of new things today. I did not know that. Thank you. Let's see. Creeper Weirdo says, what is the opposite of the They Live glasses? Let's see. What would be the opposite of the They Live glasses? I don't know. The running joke about They Live is that all of the billboards that get revealed by the glasses are actually just way better than our current ruling overlords. Like, yeah, they were like horrific aliens from outer space, but they're like, you know, get married, breed, you know, they had better life advice than the people who actually run our nation today. So that's kind of the running joke with They Live, is that the evil alien overlords are actually more benevolent than the people who are currently involved. Let's see. Tiny Stupid Demon says, National Review and bio is the new pronouns in bio. Yeah, your lips to God's ears there. Let's see. Thuggo says, great job, Ward. Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Thank you guys so much for watching. This one got a little heated in this one just because I'm so tired of this, but I feel like we can do better. We can win. Like, these are options if we just stop being idiots. Let's see. Glow in the Dark said, Erickson talks about conservatism being about breaking down power, says the bare minimum when talking about colleges, probably because he is from law school. Yeah, again, they're just conserving the systems of power that they want to be plugged into, right? Like, a lot of these guys are, they're really just second-rate elites. They're elites who are embarrassed that they have to rule over the less desirable half of the American electorate, but they're completely plugged in to all these systems. And that's why they don't want anything too radical. That's why they don't want anything that's going to come in and actually shift things, because they're deeply invested in the system. And so I think that's that's why you see a lot of them saying we can't use power to disrupt anything, because ultimately, at most they want mild reforms, because they're creatures of this thing. Let's see. Creeper Weirdo says, Orin called for a reformation. Everybody heard. I'm preparing all 99 of my theses I will go ahead and nail them to the brick wall back here in between albums. Let's see. Life of Brian says, convenient that Erickson's ideology at all always requires the refusal to use power. Yes, you really start to believe that our principles and our ideology just happen to line up with not being a serious threat to the regime, to its power, to its systems. What a surprise. What a surprise. And again, that's, I think, because a lot of that lines up with Glow in the Dark's comment about them being invested in these systems in the first place. Let's see. Theodore McCarthy says, authentic conservatism is a moral position, not an ideological position. Yeah, again, I think that's right. I think more people need to go back and look at actual conservatives, like not commentators from the last 20 years, but the guys who actually came up with this. Again, I wouldn't even call myself a conservative in that stripe, but at the very least, these guys understood that the Constitution was a reflection of the people. That all of these things that they were talking about, small government and whatnot, these were only valuable to the extent that they allowed the traditions and the folkways and the religion and the culture of the people who were American to continue and to be passed down to their children. That's what actual conservatism is. It has nothing to do with free markets or capitalism or, you know, world order or any of this stuff. That stuff might be helpful. It might not. It might apply in certain situations and not in others. The thing is to not lock yourself down into ideological systems, but to prefer always and in every situation what is best for Americans, what is healthy for them, what grows their well-being and allows them to pass that down to their descendants. You put that first, you're going to come up with much better decisions than if you sit there and say, I've got the textbook definition of what conservative ideology is. No, bad, wrong. Do not do that. Let's see here. Cherub Cow says, great stream. Thanks. Well, thanks again, man. I really appreciate everybody who comes by for the live streams. It's always great to be able to talk to you guys. And of course, guys, if it's your first time on this channel, go ahead and click subscribe, turn on your notifications, click the bell to make sure that you go ahead and get an alert. Sorry, talk too much here. My throat got dry. Make sure that you turn on the alerts, click the bell and everything so that you can catch these streams when we go live. Make sure that you also go ahead and subscribe to the Orr McIntyre Show on your favorite podcast network so that you can listen to these when you're driving around in the car, mow the lawn, lifting weights, doing all those things that you are often doing. And of course, goodness, sorry. And of course, if you would like to go ahead and pre-order my book, The Total State, talking about all of this and much more, it comes out on May 7th. Make sure that you go to Amazon or other fine retailers and get your copy now. Thank you once again, everyone, for watching. And as always, I will talk to you next time.